to start?
Don't know. We don't have the catchy music, so.
How do we want to start? Okay, welcome to this. I guess it's a podcast. I'm not really sure yet. And it's the North Street Community Church podcast in Canton, Pennsylvania. And Keegan and I are here. Say hi, Keegan.
Hello.
Make sure they can hear you, okay? So, and we're just recording this in my office at North Street. And so we wanted to do this because, well, quite frankly, because of coronavirus, kind of got us kick-started. And so that we just want to use this as a tool to connect with people, that they can listen in, maybe get to know us in some different ways, and we can talk about coronavirus a little bit. Maybe we can talk about the church and maybe what God's teaching us in this time. Not sure how long this will go, if we're going to continue doing these podcasts or not, or what this will look like entirely, but figured we'd just try this out. So, I'm Ben Hess, and I'm one of the pastors here, and
I'm Keegan Wright, another one of the pastors here.
Yeah, so Keegan and I, we've been pastoring here for a little while now. Well, Keegan hasn't been officially a pastor, but he was a youth leader before.
Right, one of those rebel youth leaders.
Yeah, one of them.
I don't know what to call him.
Yeah, he was a youth leader. He wasn't the youth pastor. I guess technically you're still not the youth pastor.
I guess.
You're a pastor who is a youth leader.
Right.
You're an associate pastor here, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really matters.
Nope.
But
doesn't matter to me.
Okay. So that's why we're doing this podcast, is just to put something else out there. We're busy enough. It's not like we have all the time in the world, but yet we still wanted to make sure that people can connect with us in different ways. And so we just wanted to start doing this and thought maybe it'd be fun. So I wanted to start. Did you ever hear about the joke? My boys love this joke, and I'm going to steal it from them. I think my son stole it from his magazine. It's like Ranger Rick Jr. or something. What do you call a bear with no teeth?
Don't know.
Oh, no? A gummy bear. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good one.
He really likes that one. I thought I'd share that with everyone. Okay. Not that that has to do anything with anything. Hopefully we can be a little humorous at times. My humor is usually pretty dry, so I'll just warn you on that. I'll try it. Maybe I'll tell people when I'm joking. I don't know. We'll see. So first off, I wanted to interview Keegan a little bit. And if you want to interview me, that's fine.
We can do that.
Just feel free to interrupt me. Make sure you're talking loud enough because the mic is not the best in here. So the first thing I wanted to ask is kind of who you are. Like, where are you from, I guess, is kind of my first question.
So typically if I'm out of state, I say near Williamsport because people know Little League World Series. But because we're here in Canton, I grew up in Granville until I was about 7, then moved down to Leroy and grew up there, and then moved away, did missions for a while, lived in Williamsport for about 2.5 years, and then now I live in Canton, right downtown.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So with that, you're a pastor, and I guess I'm just curious about your salvation experience. Were you raised in a Christian home? Those types of things, you know, however much you want to share about that,
sure.
It's fine.
So yeah, definitely raised in a Christian home. We didn't really start going to church until I was about 5, I believe. And we went to a house church right down the road here, Truth Fellowship, they called it. It was great. Learned a lot there. But then when I first felt like I was saved, it was after we moved to Leroy, and I went to Awana there at the Baptist Church.
Funny because I went there like once, and I think Josh Charles took me. I think it was like the buddy night or whatever it was.
Yeah, you got points for bringing friends.
And so I went with him, and I remember it was like, I remember Brad Martin being there.
Okay.
And Bryant, I think, was there too. Okay. And because they were kind of like, I was in the same school as them.
Yeah.
And it was like, I remember playing the games, and that was fun, like seeing who could like run the fastest and do these things or whatever. Don't remember much other than that because I didn't really go at all beyond that. But anyways, so Awana, that's great. Yeah,
so that's kind of where I was asked to specifically like invite Jesus into my heart to submit to him. And basically, as I've heard people describe it, I did it as fire insurance. Like I was terrified of hell. And so that's kind of how that decision came out of. I remember Ann Carl, she was great. She walked with me through it. And it was definitely a good thing, but it was not, it led to a lot of kind of performance thinking that you always had to do the right thing to stay saved. It wasn't so much a relationship. It was more of fire insurance and doing the right thing for a long time. But that was first how I came to salvation, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll share a little bit about me. I always feel like my story's so long because I go so in depth. So I'll just warn you on that. Like, hopefully I don't bore you to death. But originally I was born in York County, Pennsylvania. I went to a church. I'll combine my salvation experience with where I'm from. Yeah. So York County, I went to Stony Brook Mennonite Church. My parents took me there. I'm the youngest of five siblings. So, grew up in a Christian home. And the church down there preached the gospel. But I didn't tell anyone when I decided to be saved.
Yeah.
Or when I decided to be saved. When I submitted my life, I guess you could say, to Christ. And it was, all I remember was I was in my room. I'm pretty sure it was a Sunday night. I'm pretty sure Carlton Stambaugh preached a sermon. I don't remember what he preached on. And that's, as a preacher, that's comforting to me in some ways. Because it's like, I know people don't remember,
right?
99% of my sermons, they don't remember. And yet, I don't remember what Carlton Stambaugh preached on that Sunday. But hey, I submitted my life to Christ that evening. I was in bed all alone. I was mad about something. I think I was mad about going to bed because we had school the next day and I had to go to bed early.
Yep.
And my brother was still up or something. Something wasn't fair.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, I turned to Christ in that time. And I remember feeling something. Like, I can't explain it. I just felt something.
Yeah.
And an emotional thing or something. I'm assuming it's the Holy Spirit, from that time on, I considered myself to be a believer. I didn't tell anyone. I remember debating if I should tell my mom or not, but I didn't. I don't know if I was just ashamed too much. So who knows? Maybe I really wasn't a Christian. Maybe I didn't confess enough or something. But I think I really was saved in that time. And so from there, I was baptized later when we moved up to Canton, Pennsylvania, when I was 8 from York County. And I was baptized by Doug Graybill. And so that was, to me, that's still, I look back as a moment. It wasn't like super emotional or anything for me, but it was a marker for me, I think. Cool. And then for high school, during my elementary middle school time here in Canton, I went to a private Christian school. My parents were big on sending me to private Christian school. They just wanted that for me. And they sent me to Sunshine Christian School, which is a small Christian school here in Canton. They're no longer running. I went to that through 8th grade. And then they sent me down to Lancaster Mennonite High School. And all my siblings had gone there. And so that was kind of like a college experience, but it was high school for me. So got familiar with that area quite a bit. And then moved back up here to Canton area. I worked on the farm for Jay Good, and I ended up marrying one of his daughters, Corlissa.
Got the good end of the deal there.
I got the good end of the deal, yeah.
Did you have to work 7 years for her? Is that
not quite.
Okay.
So Jay was gracious to me. I didn't have to work the 7 years. I only worked, I think, I worked 2 years. We got married. I worked 2 years more. And so, yeah. So I worked a total of probably about 4 years steady on the job.
Yeah.
So 4 to 7, yeah. I don't know. So maybe he got the raw end of the deal. Probably did. Knowing me, you know. I mean, I'm not exactly the coolest. I mean, yeah, I'm not exactly, I don't know. I won out on that for sure. Because, yeah, and my in-laws have been awesome to me, and Corlissa is awesome. So, you know, I'm pretty much, I definitely married up. So, yeah, so that's pretty cool. And then, so yeah. Oh, and then, so where am I from?
Yeah.
Continuing that story, Corlissa and I got tired of the farm, and I escaped, if I can say that. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and honestly, you know, you're still young at that age. Mm-hmm. I was 4 years working. I didn't go to college, so it was like my college was working on the farm, milking cows,
sure.
Which was an experience, which was a good experience. And so I moved, Corlissa and I moved to Colorado.
Yeah.
We just moved, we up and moved. I have some siblings out there, two brothers and a sister. We moved to Colorado and I did various jobs, mostly within the cycling industry. And then, but I also started pursuing leadership in church stuff too. So that kind of went hand in hand. I went to Rocky Mountain Calvary in Colorado Springs as a church out there. So that was really cool too. Anyways, so that's a big thing that shaped me.
Yeah.
But you, yeah. You went to Reach, didn't you?
Right. Yeah. So I was one of the Reachers from our, for being a pretty rural church, we have quite a heritage of Reachers, which I'm pretty just pleased to be a part of. But yeah, so that's kind of a long story where I got there. So when I was about, since I was about 8 years old or so, I was gung-ho gonna join the army as soon as I was out of high school.
That was
where I was going, and just shaped everything. If you knew me in that time, you knew that's what I was doing, because I was pretty well talked about that all the time. And so much so, I didn't take SATs or anything at the end of high school. I was like, I'm going to the army, that doesn't matter. But as I was a senior, it was about time to graduate. Something wasn't sitting right about that. I was like, it wasn't feeling right. So my buddy and I were going to go to a recruiter just to find out some more information. And we went together so that we wouldn't be talked into signing papers that day. So we said we went in, we're not going to sign papers. And I prayed on the way. I was like, God, if this isn't what you want me to do, then let this be a terrible experience, which I don't know why that made sense to me at the time, but now people are like, why did you ask that? So like I could have asked for making something dry or wet like Gideon did, but instead I asked for that. And it was terrible. I went in. For one, I had always wanted to do Army, not Marines. And the Army recruiters weren't there, so we went to Marine recruiter. And then they basically, the one guy was really nice, and then the sergeant came out and was really wanted us to sign papers. It was towards the end of the month, and somehow, I don't know, they wanted me to sign papers, and we weren't going to, so they just scolded us for a long time, a couple hours. And I know that's not typical, so that was definitely a God.
So they didn't quite win you over on that.
They didn't. So, and that's not typical then. So I knew that was God answering my strange prayer to show me where he didn't want me to go. So then for me, sitting around not doing anything was terrifying. I don't like feeling like I'm not doing something, not being a part of something. So I was praying, really seeking God, if that's not where you want me to go, then where do you want me to go? And felt him calling me towards missions. And so kind of flashback to Awana again. I remember once or twice missionaries coming and speaking at Awana, and I thought, they are weird. I don't know who would do this.
Yeah, most of them are probably
weird. We're pretty weird. But so when I felt God calling me to missions, it definitely wasn't like something that had always been in the back of my mind or anything. And so I knew Brooks. Brooks Gleckner was my best friend growing up. Knew he was planning on doing Reach, but I really didn't know much about it. And I knew that the deadline for Reach was already up. So first I called Doug Graybill because, again, back up again, I had just started coming to Canton in the night with Brooks because we had left our other church, and I did not want to go anywhere, so I started coming with Brooks. And didn't really know anybody there too much. I knew Doug had always been the pastor. I didn't realize he wasn't currently. So I called him, and he sent me to Darren. Went into Darren's office, first time I really met him, and said, hey, feel called to missions. And he said, let me make a call. And so he called Reach. They had just had someone drop out. Just had someone drop out, so there was an open spot. And so it was definitely a God thing.
So you really experienced kind of this progression of God experiences in your mind, of like God directly kind of leading you step by step. Absolutely. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. There was definitely no question that's where God wanted me to be at that time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to think back about your experiences, because when you start to think back, you can start to see kind of how God, like I said, is leading you. And, you know, I find that to be the case so often. Like, if I take time to sit back and say, wow, like, you know, in the time that I had this maybe a hard experience, I didn't realize that God was just maybe preparing me for the next one, or just happened, like, and not that God was like purposely like, you know, you're going to learn a lesson here, but more like he was putting me into certain positions that like I had no idea I would learn from and in the future. It's just interesting that
it is
how that works.
And didn't you, so when you just, you said you kind of just left, up and left to Colorado, but then there was a specific call to come back, wasn't there?
Yeah, so I was basically exploring pastoral leadership in some way. Yeah. I had always felt a call on my life in church leadership in some way. I just didn't know what it looked like. I was the humble Mennonite, so to speak, who didn't want to, like, and I still struggle with this. Right. Like, when it comes to, you know, just being more assertive, I guess, it's like I wanted to make sure it was God that was calling me, I guess. And so I kind of ignored the call because I was like, oh, the church will call me. Like, they're the ones that are going to call me. They're the ones that are, you know, God is going to use to guide me in a certain way. And so, you know, I was kind of interested in leadership. I had, and I had talked to Doug really briefly, Doug Graybill, about it.
Sure.
Just very briefly, like, hey, you know. And he had involved me a little bit in some leadership meeting type things.
Yeah.
But then we went to Colorado and still didn't know what that looked like.
Sure.
Although I do have to go back. There's one story. So Corlissa and I, we were snowboarding at Ski Sawmill. We were dating, I think. Yeah, we were dating.
Okay.
We weren't engaged or anything. We were dating. We were at Ski Sawmill, and we were going up the lift. And I don't know how it came up, but I brought up the fact that God, that someday in the future, I might be a pastor or church leadership of some sort. So if she didn't want to date me or marry me, like, she needs to, like, know that up front. Because, like, if she, like, it could be interesting. My life could be interesting, I guess. And not the easiest, you know? And so I knew stuff back in the day, but I didn't know what it looked like. And then as time went on, when we were living in Colorado, I was looking for a new job. And during that time, you do a lot of soul searching. Like, what do I really want to do in life? And those types of things. And so I started opening up to more of a call to ministry, and specifically through the church leadership of some sort. And we had always been involved in just, you know, young adults or youth or whatever that we found ourselves in. And so during that time, I shared with one of the pastors at Rocky Mountain Calvary. And I went up to him, and he was a straight shooter kind of guy.
Yeah.
I told him, look, I feel a call to ministry, call to pastoral leadership in some sort, I think. Right. And I told him, but if you don't think so, tell me right now, because I want to know if you don't see these qualities in me, like, tell me right now so I can get it out of my mind.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, let's meet. So that kind of started, and he actually mentored me for a while. And then I knew that North Street was kind of looking for an associate pastor of some sort after a while. And I emailed Darren, because he was here at that time. I emailed him because I didn't actually know Darren at all.
Sure.
And I told him kind of the same thing, like, hey, I know you guys are looking for somebody. I'm just throwing my name out there.
Yeah.
If you think that I'm not for this, like, tell me right away.
Yeah.
Like, so I can get it out of my mind.
Yeah.
Because I always said I would never go back to Pennsylvania.
Sure.
Unless God took me back for some weird reason.
Yeah.
And so Darren responded, and actually Darren and Karen had come out to Colorado, visited with us.
Cool.
And then presented it to the elders. And it kind of took off from there.
Yeah.
And so, and not without its struggles, of course.
Sure.
But so that's when we felt eventually the call to come back.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting process, one that I still sometimes wonder about.
Yeah.
If I'm honest, you know, deep down inside, I'm like, oh, I miss Colorado in a lot of ways. But now that we've been back now for over 5 years, and we really do feel called. We really feel like this is where we're supposed to be at this time.
Good.
And don't see us moving or anything like that in the near future. Mm-hmm. So we really feel good about that. It's been an interesting ride for us.
Yeah.
I know you shared with elders before about your call, and we had placed you in youth leadership after your second REACH term.
Right.
So you went overseas for a couple times.
Yep.
And then you came back, and what was, I guess, or you can share other times too, but I just was curious about your call to ministry, and specifically here at North Street.
Sure. Yeah, so after my first year of REACH, typically REACH is a one-time thing. Like, you don't do it twice. It's a post-high school experience to really, just give you missional mindset of just some good discipleship training. But my one buddy from out there, Luke Spalding, he would always say, it didn't stick, so they called us back to be team leaders so they had another year with us to work on us. But that was huge for me. I really knew, like, I had wanted to be a REACH team leader, and then they didn't call me during outreach like they do some people of my first year. So I was like, okay, well, I guess that's not where I'll be going. And then kind of last minute, I think it was in July, and the training started in August. They called me, and I was super excited.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And never forget that. So anyway, that was a cool, great experience there. I had already met my wife Charity out there the first time I went to REACH.
Okay. But you weren't dating.
But we weren't dating. You're not allowed to date and REACH.
Yeah, you weren't dating.
Right.
Kind of, not really,
but
sort of.
Somehow, you're not allowed to date and REACH, but somehow a lot of married couples come out of REACH at the other end. But anyway, but we didn't break covenant. We didn't.
Okay.
We didn't date during. But the day that we dissolved our covenants, I asked her to go out with me.
Oh,
she said yes. So we did. We dated a very short time. Because she lived out in Dayton, Ohio. Like I said, I'd already known her pretty well for 2 years, and that 8-hour drive was a lot. So
yes.
we got engaged after about 4 months of dating, and then we're married 3 months later in December.
Yeah.
So then we moved to Williamsport. I was going to school for nursing, wanted to be a nurse.
Okay.
Was liking that. It was really good for us being a little ways from both of our family, just so that we would really leave and cleave, come together. It was a good time. Then all of a sudden one day I was washing dishes. Like Ben said, I'd been leading the youth here since my second term of of Reach and loved it. Loved the youth. Loved, yeah, they were like a family to me.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, one day I was washing dishes and felt like God saying, I want you to be in more full-time ministry in Canton.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
So I was like, okay. I thought Charity's not going to like this because it's even an hour further away from her family. But one of the big confirmations there was she was like not surprised at all. God is
speaking. That's funny. Her, like, yeah.
That's
awesome. I love that you were doing the dishes. Like, I seriously, I think it's, there's something there, like in my mind, like that, you know, you're just doing some ordinary thing and just God breaks through in some weird way and you're just like, it changes your life.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Yeah.
It did. And we didn't know what it looked like. I didn't even know if it necessarily met at North Street or what. It just, in Canton was all I got. And so we came, talked to Darren, talked to the elders about the call, shared that with the congregation, and then sold our house in Bridgeport, stayed in the apartment at, above Darren's garage for a while we found the house. Then moved in, and then after that, I believe it was after we'd already moved in, then was asked to be associate pastor here. So, okay. Just kind of then learned that, along that way that Darren was being called elsewhere. And so I didn't know that when I first felt the call up to Canton. So I didn't even know that there would be a leadership.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that either at that point.
I don't think any of us did. I don't even know. I don't think he had felt it yet either.
Right, right.
So it was, definitely God moving. It was a scary thing. It was kind of, I felt specifically I was supposed to completely drop out of school and not finish nursing.
So that is, you're stepping out for sure then.
Right. Yeah. We didn't know what, so I did some odd jobs for a while. But definitely.
So you ended up getting your nursing, kind of? No, you're certified something.
Right. So I'm a certified nurse's aide now, is kind of the bottom of the nursing totem pole. So, but I love it. I love getting to spend time with residents at the Bradford County Manor. It's great.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so like on the side, I do a lot of things on the side, mostly coffee. Roast coffee.
Really good coffee.
So, thanks. So that's a side job for me. I don't know that I make a lot of money at it. Well, actually, I know I don't really make a lot of money at it, but it's something that, gets a little cash flow and like, or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
And it gets me in the community a little bit and then something to talk about and things like that. I also do some stuff, some other things here and there, but it's mostly that's so I'm not technically considered full-time here at the church, even though it's kind of that way. And that's okay. Like, I'm totally cool with that. Yeah. So, and I it's hard, but I like it.
Yeah.
When I'm having anxiety or depression or something like that, that's not always, I don't always feel that way. But just me sharing here with you, like, that helps just... especially in this time of coronavirus and all that kind of stuff. So, that's cool. One last thing I wanted to ask you before we talk about coronavirus was children. You have some children, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I have Nadia.
Well, I know you do have children.
Yes.
You have children.
So, yeah. Yeah, I have Nadia is my oldest. She's 3, and she is just Miss Independent. She's very, very free-spirited, does her own thing. And then Titus is 1, and he is... the exact opposite. Mama's boy, through and through, but super sweet. And then we have a third on the way.
All right. Yeah, that's right.
So he'll be here in July.
So, and his kids are awesome. They're totally cute.
And they know it. They get away a lot. But, and then you, so one question I had, you have kids and you can talk about that, but did you have your oldest before you moved back from Colorado?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So we have 4 boys.
Yeah.
Dietrich is, he was born in Colorado Springs. And he is 5, no, what in the world? He's 6. Yeah. Sorry, I don't even know all their ages anymore. Because they're just like...
run together.
So Dietrich, and then when we moved back from Colorado, Corlissa was, I think, 7 months pregnant or something like that. So yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And then we had Conrad here in Williamsport. And then
he has tons of hair. I remember when I first met him.
Yeah.
He had tons of hair for how old
he was. Our kids were cute when they were born. Except for Simon was a little bit less cute. Sorry, Simon. I said that. But it's true. It's like, you know, sometimes babies aren't always exactly the good, best looking. I can't believe I'm saying this right now, but it's true.
I thought he was cute. He looked a lot like his grandpa.
So, who?
It looked like Jay.
Which one? Which
Simon?
Simon? I don't know.
Looked a lot like.
Anyway, they're all cute. Yeah. Whatever. Okay, I backtrack. I'm digging myself in a hole here. But, so we had Dietrich, then we had Conrad. Conrad is 4 now. No. He's 5. No, he's 4. He's 4. Yeah, he's 5. He's 5.
Yeah.
Sorry. He's 5 years old. He just turned 5. Okay. And then
this is turning out to be the hardest question.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. And then Simon, he's just one of a kind. Love the poor boy. He is just so awesome. I love them all, of course. I used to have favorites, I think. But as time goes on, it's harder.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
If I can admit that.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
That's terrible. I feel like a terrible father right now. But anyways, so then Simon, and he's 3.
Sure.
Yeah, he's 3. He just turned 3. And then I have Jonas is our youngest,
yeah.
And he's 1 year old. And they're all awesome.
Yeah. They're good boys.
Yeah, I mean, they have their faults for sure.
They're terrified of dogs.
Yeah, they're terrified of dogs. And don't think you can make them like dogs, because they won't. Right. Not until they're ready. Like,
right.
For whatever reason. That's okay, you know. Mm-hmm. We work with them, try to do best we can. But yeah, it's been interesting. I feel like I'm getting older. Because I have 4 children, pretty close together,
yeah.
1 to, 6.
Yeah.
And then, Corlissa and I have been married now for 12 and a half years.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it makes me feel a little older,
yeah.
I guess. You're still young.
Yeah.
I mean, you still have, but you'll be there before you know it.
Yep.
Like, seriously.
The youth remind me how old I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing how much the generation gap, even, a few years can make a world of difference. And yet, I think it's healthy to, be intergenerational and
sure.
All that, too. It's crazy. So, okay. Did you have any other questions related to personal, thinking about sharing about my dad and my mom?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think I'm going to wait on that.
Sure.
Maybe we'll do that in another thing I can talk about.
Sure.
Some of those dynamics.
Yeah, sounds good.
But maybe let's move into coronavirus. So our life has been tossed upside down by this coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
We are not doing services, weekend services here. We kind of let the individual ministries, the leaders decide kind of if they want to keep proceeding or not on some of the stuff. Most things are pretty much shut down,
right,
though. And I think that's okay, considering
yep.
the gravity of the situation, so to speak.
Sure.
Has your life slowed down at all because of this? Because, mine hasn't. I'll just
right.
say that
right.
up front. But I don't know if yours has sped up or slowed down at all.
So mine hasn't changed too much, which makes it almost more difficult seeing things around you change.
Yeah.
But then yours hasn't really. So, my routine's the same, but then it's affected by coronavirus and things.
Right.
Because, I work in healthcare and I work here, so it's the same, same general routine, other than I don't get to meet with people near as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more phone calls, but so it changes how you do things, but as far as my schedule, it's about the same.
Okay.
And my wife said the best. She said, She's like, I don't really go anywhere very often during the week. So she said it hasn't really changed anything. But now the fact that I have to stay at home and that I don't have the option makes it worse.
So, the law makes you want to disobey the law.
Yeah, pretty much. So it really hasn't changed too much. We do have some more evenings free with some of the ministries being done in the evening. So that's been good to have some more time with the kids. But
yeah, that's what I found. So, like, it's interesting for me. I don't feel like, if anything, it's gotten harder in some ways, almost more busy, which is so weird because things have kind of slowed up. So, like, we're not doing the weekend service, so I don't have to plan that. So that's kind of, like, different.
Yeah.
And it could be freeing. And I think it is in some ways for this season, I guess. But, yeah, I don't know if it's because I use so much of my time worrying or researching or trying to catch up with people or what the deal is. It just has not been easy. And I find that a lot of people with families in particular are more busy than ever.
Yeah.
And then those...
Especially school-aged children.
Yeah, especially school-aged children.
Yeah.
It's like... And then everybody's sending you, you know, things of like what you should be doing or what you can do. And it's like... Well, I just need a breather, you know? And then, but then it's funny because then we have like, if you're just like a couple and like, if you got laid off your work from your work, or if you're not doing, you're working from home and, or you're a single person and you're doing less, it's like really hard because like you don't have anything to do or you're trying to figure out what to do. And even for me as a pastor, me trying just to figure out what to do that's right. You know, yeah, there's always stuff to do, but like, what's the right thing to do right now, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely has been a struggle. And so, yeah, it's definitely thrown a wrench in things for my life, at least.
Yeah.
Trying to figure things out. So that's been interesting. I've been... and I think the original struggle of trying to figure out if we were going to cancel weekend services was hard for me.
Yeah.
I know there's some rebel churches out there that are not, and they're getting in trouble. Right. And I don't know that that's the right thing to do.
Right.
I'm definitely, you know, the struggle of how do you maintain relationships and things like that is definitely something. Right.
I definitely miss that. There's a lot of times it's like, oh, you know what? I'll get to see them someday and catch up, see how they're doing. And you miss that a lot now. It definitely takes some more being intentional to reach out to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The journey here was interesting with this coronavirus because, like, I didn't take it too seriously when it was just, like, over in China and over in some of the other Asian countries. But then as soon as it hit Italy, for whatever reason, I was pretty like, all right, maybe I need to pay attention.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still like, yeah, well, I don't know. And then again, you know, you're like comparing it with the flu because that's what the president kind of did, or that's what, you know, and then you're like, you realize, okay, it's not quite the same. And now with the projections, they're projecting quite a high number of death in our country, which is higher from my understanding than the flu. But, you know, so trying to figure out, like, the political landscape a little bit. I hate saying that.
Right.
But, and the media and what's true and not, you know, that's been a big struggle, I think, in our country lately with this whole thing and trying to sort all that out.
For sure.
So, yeah, going through those stages of, like, okay, this is just hype.
Yeah.
To, okay, no, this is actually happening.
Yeah.
To, like, okay, can I accept this?
Right.
And, like, is there any hope?
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're definitely a hopeful guy.
Yeah.
I would label Keegan as a hopeful guy, more hopeful than I am.
Yeah.
I tend to be more negative, or at least I just, for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe I'm too influenced by the media.
More of a realist.
I don't know. You're definitely more hopeful, and I think that's good. We need that. There is hope. In this situation,
there's a good balance between us, I think, because sometimes I'm too, maybe too hopeful, but that's all right. Like, I'll look at the realistic projections and then I'll pray for a lot sooner.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And I think we're all doing that.
I think that's a good,
yeah. I think that's a good way to put it. We see the hard things, and it's like, you know what? You know, pray that it'll happen sooner.
Yeah.
And take the necessary measures yourself as well.
Yeah.
If you need to.
I'm really praying it'll happen sooner so that, and asking God that, so that the world will know it was Him that did it. Because if it happens much sooner than projections, people can come up with other explanations, but it was a miracle.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm praying for just for people to see something. Because we're to the point now the world sees that we don't have any control over it.
Yeah.
But God does. And so that's my prayer.
So what do you feel like God is teaching you kind of through this time? Because, like, I've been, like, just – there's a lot going on in my mind.
Yeah.
When it comes to Scripture, when it comes to God and how He's – you know, He's our ultimate hope.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to have hope that this thing won't last. Right. It's another thing to, like, have hope in God and say, you know what, He's in control. I know that even if I get sick and die, my future's secure in Christ. Like, I know that. And sometimes that's hard to, like, you know, emotionally come to terms with or that kind of thing. But is there some, I don't know, do you have anything to share on what some things got? I'll share a couple things too. Well, okay, so, like, one thing, and I've shared this with Keegan before, I think, but just this whole thing of, like, it's interesting to me how health and wealth have been such a big topic over this time.
Yeah.
And so, like, the health, the so-called health and wealth gospel that's so prevalent in American society, I wonder if that's just being targeted by God as, and I'm not saying, like, He's judging us in that way, but maybe it's like He's using this to get rid of some of those ideas.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The idolatry, you know, as much as, like, I say I'm not a health and wealth gospel kind of person, the reality is how I live my life, like, I have to come to terms, like, you know, like, maybe I probably practice it more than than I want to, you know, and so, like, that's what I'm finding, like, those are idols, you know, wealth and health. Mm-hmm. Our idols, maybe, in many of our lives that we need to recognize and say, you know what, I'm repenting of that and I'm going to go follow Christ or whatever that looks like. So that's just one thought I had.
Definitely.
I don't know.
God's been teaching a lot, and just kind of one thing you'd said, Ben, a lot was we get so pressured from social media or whatever of all the things we should be doing. So that was just really, I didn't realize that was what was happening to me, because I was getting all stressed out, like, and I didn't know why. And then you said that, I was like, that's what it is. I think I need to, and maybe there's some things I could be doing more. I'm still seeking that because I want to be using this time effectively. But it was, it was overwhelming for a while. And so that was really good and just drove me to Jesus. Like, what do you want to see happen
in
this time? And, so you just learning how much I was getting caught up in the typical schedule of things and not listening for Him in the little things. And I preached on that not too long ago. Like, seeing Jesus in the small things. Taking time for that.
We all experience those things where you preach and then you realize you're not practicing what you're preaching. Happens all the time. But we try. We repent and we keep.
But that's the big thing, is like asking God in the little things, what do you want to do? When things go back to normal, continue that practice of asking God, what do you want to see happening?
That's good. There's so many things, I feel like. Like a little thing, I was just sharing this morning with John. He was here. I was saying how, like, I think I've actually experienced some real anxiety for the first time. Maybe not the first time in my life, but more like that I've noticed it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, that gives me compassion on those who do have anxiety and are dealing with it almost on a daily basis. You're like just... You can't, like, sit still, or you're just, like, your chest hurts, or, you know, different things like that, the stress.
Like, don't get me wrong, I feel like I don't have anything to be anxious about, but, like, it came. And I was like, what in the world? Why is this happening? And I think I understand now, like, people who feel like they don't have control over those types of things. And so it gives me a little more compassion for some of those people that, you know, do struggle with this on a more regular basis. So that was another thing that was really, you know, to me, just, wow, okay. And there's so much. I can't help but think of, well, creation. You know, it's springtime, and I love creation. And I'm not, like, an environmentalist, like, one of them liberal whatever whack jobs. Okay, I'm not saying that. But when you do see some of these statistics of, like, you know, in China, they can actually see the sun. You know, because the smog isn't there because they shut down. You know, things like that. I can't help but wonder what God is telling us through that. Like, now, again, I think we should take care of the earth. Like, I do believe that. I think that's one of God's original commandments. And stewarding our environment. Now, don't worship the environment. You know, we are to steward it well. And I can't help but think, you know, maybe we have gone overboard a little bit on some of the pollution and stuff. I don't know. It's just a thought. I, like I said, I'm not a proponent of, you know, regulating everything and all that. I'm not saying that. But I think it's something to think about, at least, you know, some of the repercussions from the shutdown, you know. Another thing has been rest. Almost like this forced rest that's been put on people. And I think for some people it's been really good. We don't know how to rest anymore as a society, it seems like. And kind of taking that sabbatical rest and being okay with that. Being okay with not doing anything. Certain people, anyways. I don't feel like I'm not doing anything. But still,
It could force us to find our identity in something other than our jobs or things like that, or our typical programs or whatever it is, which could be a good thing, too.
And that's something even personally I just, you know, without a weekend service, I don't get to preach. Or I don't get to be up front in the church service. It's like, am I putting my identity so in that, that, like, now I'm so insecure about, you know, the coronavirus and what it's doing, you know? And something to think about, because I know I've struggled with that. And, you know, that's definitely something to... So just being vulnerable here and all of that.
For sure.
Well, I think we should probably finish up. Was there anything else you wanted to
say? No, I think that was good.
So we might do this more. I don't know. I kind of liked it so far. Maybe we could interview somebody or just keep sharing different things through this time.
I just think this was good. Just be vulnerable, talk a little bit about who we are, and maybe, like you said, do some interviews, and maybe we'll think of a catchy title for it or something.
And some theme music.
But no, we just want to connect with you guys more and as much as we can, because we miss you.
I want to reiterate this, because he said it, and we mean it. We miss you guys.
And we're here for you.
And we care for you guys, whoever's listening. Particularly those in our congregation, but even outside of that. You know, our hearts are heavy. There's something about not being able to meet as a whole that is just grates on me, you know? And so it's tough, but I think we'll get through this. We've never been through something like this, and we're learning as we go, seeing what God has for us along the path, one step at a time. So thanks, Keegan, for your willingness to share and be here. And
thank you.
We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll do more of these. We'll see. I wanted to end, though, with a selection out of the Mennonite hymnal. It's from their supplication and intercession prayer. And so I'm just going to pray this, and we'll end our time with this. O Father, who rules the world from end to end and from everlasting to everlasting, make us to know that you are God and that in you alone is our hope. Give us grace to repent of our sins and to yield our wills to yours, that you may forgive all our iniquities and heal all our diseases and redeem our lives from destruction. Bring us more and more into fellowship with you, O God of peace, that we may have peace within our hearts, and that you, O Lord, may work through us to give peace to the world. Through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.